I am here in a studio with Karen Fabrizio, and I'm also in here with Sandra Blatchford. They have a wonderful story to tell. They're an organization that helps people in many different ways, and this is relatively new for me. They've been in business, or they've been organized for about 40 years, the South Shore Resource and Advocacy Center, formerly the South Shore Women's Resource Center, and ladies, I want to make sure I have this correct, is a victim service, not-for-profit, community-based program that has been assisting survivors of domestic violence for over 40 years. That's quite a noble mission. Karen, thanks so much for joining us today. Sandra, thanks so much for joining us today. You know, when you hear about some of the things that you folks do, it just is amazing, because I know that you will help families, say, after a homicide in Plymouth County. I really didn't know about your services, Sandra. Tell me a little bit about typically how you advocate for people and help them.
Well, for our homicide bereavement program, I would have Karen answer those questions because she is the program coordinator for the SHARES program. But we do have a domestic violence program where we provide victim services to survivors of domestic violence, as well as children of who might have witnessed violence or may be impacted by domestic violence. Our domestic violence programming is both center and community based, so we do meet victims in the communities that they reside in. We also have center based services, which include individual counseling as well as support groups. We have a Safe Plan advocacy program in four courts. And that's the Hingham District Court, Plymouth District Court, Wareham District Court, and Plymouth Probate and Family Court, where we assist survivors in obtaining either an abuse prevention order, Chapter 209A, or as most people call it, restraining order, as well as a 250AD, which is a harassment order. We also have a dating violence program where we work with our local schools in providing education around teen dating violence, as well as we will provide services to teens who are experiencing violence within their relationship. We also have the Shagley program, which is the South Shore Alliance for Gay and Lesbian Youth, and we meet bi-weekly, and that also, all of our services are free and confidential. We also have a Grandparents Raising Grandchildren's program, as well as a hospital-based program for domestic violence, where we meet survivors at Beth Israel Deaconess Plymouth. We also provide a food pantry, clothing closet, 24-hour hotline, as well as emergency backup. And we also have a Road to Healing program, which is for victims and survivors who have been impacted by an impaired driver.
So if somebody is listening right now and thinks, I know someone that needs her help, I need her help, is there a way that they can get in contact with you, or do they have to be referred to you? And do you have a phone number? Do you have a website? How do they find out more about if you can help them?
The best way to reach us is at 508-746-2664, and that is our direct number. And someone can call directly, someone can be referred. We do not have a waiting list, so if somebody contacts our agency, we work immediately to provide services. We also provide emergency crisis intervention. We also have a transitional housing program as well for survivors who are transitioning out of a violent relationship. So we have a host of programs where we can also help someone to secure safety if they are fleeing from their abuser.
Have they ever called you people angels that walk this earth?
They call Karen an angel who walks the earth very often.
I believe it, because I'm in awe of everything you do. I had a little inkling of what you do, but I had no idea your programs were so comprehensive. Karen, tell me a little bit about what you coordinate and the folks that you help and who you deal with. Karen Fabrizio.
Thank you. So I am the program coordinator for SHARES, which means Survivors of Homicide, Aftermath Resource and Education Services. And we have a children's program called HEART, which stands for Healing Arts, Education and Reconnecting Together. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we normally get referrals from either sometimes police departments, mostly from Bristol County and Plymouth County District Attorney's Office. So when there's a homicide that comes in, they give me a call and we do a small summary of what the situation is when the homicide occurred, and they talk to me about the people that are in need of the services, which at that point I reach out to the people, I set up an appointment, go out and talk to them about what we do. We do a lot of in-home because it's a very sensitive time, mm-hmm. and a lot of the people can't just get up and function and go to different offices, so we try to make it as easy as we can for them. And then we do a lot of emotional support, some we do grief counseling, we help them through the court process. We can help anybody that has been affected anywhere. So if the homicide or somebody that's been affected is in Plymouth or Bristol County and they have a connection, say, out in California, and there's no services out there, which I would try to find for them, mm-hmm. I could do phone calls and talk to them also and help them through some of the problems and processes that they have.
Is there any kind of a, and it's hard to say because every situation is unique, is there any type of typical scenario that happens after, say, a family member has been murdered? Is there something you find that they need right away and that they need long term?
So they need resources and emotional support, short and long term. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing I feel like is when I go out to a family, I want to build trust and communication, mm-hmm. before anything, and let them know that my emotion is going to be there for them, you know, in any capacity that they need. There's a long court process, so we are with them throughout the whole entire court process from the first arraignment all the way to the sentencing and impact statements. Mm-hmm. We help them with impact statements. A lot of the children that I work with, if they can verbalize what they want to put because they have been affected, I will work with them on that. And then sometimes I read it for them or read, you know, it to the judge and to the people that are in the courtroom because they, A, don't have the ability, or they don't have the strength, or they're just too young to do it, so they'll draw pictures.
Sure.
And we do a lot of arts and creativity with the adults in group and with the young children in group because it gives them a chance and an opportunity to not be dwelling on the situation, but to be healing and working through it, mm-hmm. which also gives them an opportunity to feel a lot safer and a lot calmer while they're talking through their particular situation.
Do you find that people now are more willing and ready to say that they do need some help? Because it seemed like years ago, people, oh, no, I'm fine, I'm okay. Do you think now that people talk about situations where they might need help from some situation that happens, a terrible one such as a homicide, are they more willing to accept some help, some guidance, some comfort?
I think it's probably an 80-20 that they are willing to accept, mm-hmm. guidance and comfort. Not everybody wants to do that. Not everybody's ready. Not everybody trusts, mm-hmm. you know, and to have somebody going into their home, sometimes they feel a little uncomfortable about it. So I will try to, like, take a walk, meet at a park. When it was COVID and we couldn't connect, we would park our cars side by side. You know, I will, in my program, try to be as creative as possible to give the people the services that they need and, mm-hmm. always be there for them.
What about, Sandra, I heard that you recently spoke, you and Karen spoke with students at Wim Hansen Regional High School about White Ribbon Day. Tell our listeners what White Ribbon Day is if they're not familiar with that, and about the Respect Fully Pledge, which is an initiative to provide dating tips for teens.
So the White Ribbon Campaign was created when a gunman took fire in Canada on several nursing engineering students who, and it was directly because they were female. And so a group of men in Canada decided that, it was actually in Montreal, that they were going to establish the White Ribbon Campaign, stating that here we are as men, we're not going to tolerate gender-based violence, mm-hmm. that violence that is perpetrated for the specifics because someone is female. They organized and created the White Ribbon Campaign. In Massachusetts, the White Ribbon Campaign has evolved, and Jane Doe, which is the domestic violence and sexual assault organization for Coalition for Massachusetts has modified the pledge to be more inclusive of really focusing on gender-based violence, but also violence that really for all people to really take a stand against violence that is perpetrated against someone because of ability, race, gender, identity, so that it's more inclusive, where students so take a pledge that they will not be silent or condone violence. The White Ribbon Campaign does very much, though, focus on gender-based violence, which often can get overlooked when we are looking at violence within a community, or if we're looking at sexual assault or domestic violence, that while perpetration occurs to people who identify as male, female, or, you know, that they, gender-based violence is, includes catcalling or committing a violent act against a person who identifies as female solely because they are female. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that oftentimes we don't always look at that, that, you know, if a young woman is walking down the street and is catcalled, that that in of itself is a form of gender-based violence because it makes a young woman feel, or any woman feel, very uncomfortable. I have spoken to women who, you know, that they've been catcalled, and then when they don't respond to the males catcalling them, that they are then yelled at, called names, made to feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and unsafe in the, on their own streets. Mm-hmm. And so the White Ribbon Campaign is really focused on, let's look at all kinds of violence that is perpetrated against women and really take a stand against that to ensure that people who identify as female feel safe on their streets, mm-hmm. feel safe in their schools, feel safe in their employment, and feel safe at home.
Do you think these lessons that we talk about, I think people in my generation might have kept quiet about too many things when you're talking about issues like that. Do you find the younger generation is more, I know these things still happen, but do you think they're more open to listening, saying, hey, why do you do that? Women really don't like it, so stop it. Do you think that they're more in tune with that, or is it the same?
I think that this generation, I have a lot of hope for high schoolers, mm-hmm. and this generation of college students, that there is a lot more awareness around all of these issues, around gender-based violence, that mm-hmm. no, women don't like it, that that there is more awareness that if they know someone who has been sexually assaulted, or they know someone who's in a dating violent relationship, or they see that someone is being attacked based on their identity, that there is a lot more response to that and a lot more organization and advocacy and peer leadership that occurs. That I know that when I first started doing the work, there was less of that. I mean, mm-hmm. actually, I remember actually giving a presentation. I was in my early 20s to a high school, and I was discussing sexual assault, and I said, if someone says no, no means no. Mm-hmm. And I had a football coach approach me after and say, you know, that's just a lie, that women mean, when they say no, they really mean yes. And I was mortified. Mm-hmm. Today, I would not, and that there were a lot more students who disagreed with me around sexual assault. Today, when I've done presentations, there is a lot more inclusion, a lot more advocacy, a lot more peer leadership to be part of creating a solution rather than being part of the problem. So I do have a lot more
Good.
Hope.
Some hope for the future. If people want to find out more about all the services that you can direct people to, give us your phone number again and the website, please. Sandra?
So our phone number is 508-746-2664. And our website is www.thessrac.org.
And that's V as in Victor? S.
It's S-S-R-A-C. www.ssrac.org. RAC.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we get that, and we'll get that up online too. Karen, any last words for our listeners today? Sounds like you folks do good work.
Thank you. I just want everybody to know that we're not judgmental, and everything is free and confidential. And if you're out there suffering, don't suffer alone, because we can help you through a lot of the process that you're going through. And if you need, you know, anything, if we don't have it, we will find a way to help you through it or get it for you.
That's wonderful. We appreciate it. Any last comments, Sandra?
That we are here to support and that we believe.
That's wonderful. Again, that's Karen Fabrizio and Sandra Blatchford from the South Shore Resource and Advocacy Center. We'll put this interview up online. Thank you so much for joining us today, ladies.
Thank you.